wasn't the first to 600 pounds, though. I graduated high school close to 600 pounds. Well, I probably started my weight gain because when I was doing pro wrestling, I was over 300 pounds. I was about 340, 350. And the weight gain really started happening after I started driving the truck. It started happening after I got into a car accident. And I couldn't hardly move for like over a year. And I think I lost a lot of muscle mass. And I was still eating like I was working out, but I wasn't working out because I physically couldn't do it. But I still had that appetite. I didn't weigh myself for like 3-4 years. Then that truck scale happened.
That was my guest on today's show, Yogi Parker. Today's part two of our discussion of Yogi's journey through nutrition to cure symptoms of CTE. And oh, by the way, the side effect was weight loss. So stay tuned. Part two is coming right up.
Into Relationships and You, hosted by Toby Jenkins, a licensed marriage and family therapist serving Central Kentucky. Each week, Toby will bring you a show with a topic related to mental health, relationships, or self-improvement. The name of the show, Paradigm, comes from that moment in the therapy process when a profound shift in perspective happens for a client. An epiphany, sometimes accompanied by physical reaction that leads them to look at things differently and make significant steps towards improving and enriching their lives.
You're listening to Paradigm, Insights into Relationships and You. I'm your host, Toby Jenkins. Today, my guest is Yogi Parker, host of the Fatty Joe podcast. And, you know, we were talking about before the break, the various ways that from a cultural standpoint, we put a lot of pressure on men and women from different aspects about weight. And that creates a lot of shame and guilt and pressure. You know, the shame is very, you know, you talked about having food addictions before, and I often see the shame cycle is alive, not only in food addiction, but like other substance abuse too. And basically the shame cycle is you rely on willpower to stop, you have some type of relapse, and you get to the "oh, screw it" moment. I'm just going to eat 9 pizzas. And then you feel really bad about yourself. You're a bad person. You're a failure. So then you eat more to reinforce how you feel. And this cycle continues. And so for many, especially when trying to take on significant weight loss, it can seem like an impossible thing to take on. So at your heaviest, then starting the journey, what was that like for you?
I actually wasn't trying to lose weight. I was trying to fix my brain. And so I had listened to a radio show called Let's Truck. It was about the trucking industry and mainly about the business and the maintenance of the trucks and things. But they do this section called Destination Health. And the host, Kevin Rutherford, said, started referencing the research of Dominic D'Agostino on when it came to like PTSD. They started talking about the Charlie Foundation. They started talking about the ketogenic diet and how it affected brain health. And I said, well, you know, I didn't think I was going to lose weight because it went against every weight loss dogma I had ever been taught in my life. But I thought maybe there's something here to fix the brain. If it's helping people with seizures, it's helping people with PTSD, traumatic brain injuries. So I started researching into it and different ways to go about the ketogenic diet. But I also started researching because there's a number of ways to be vegan. There's a number of ways to be vegetarian. And there's a number of ways of being ketogenic that are healthy, but there's definitely a wrong way to do any one of these things. Mm-hmm. So, and So I wanted to make sure with my experience going into diet programs before that I was doing things the right way. So I started researching. One of the first books I read was Eat the Yolks by Liz Wolf. And I tried initially to jump straight into a ketogenic approach with the high fat, but my body was not used to processing all that fat right away. So I transitioned into a whole real foods diet, and I ate things that would specifically help me be able to digest fats.
Things Quick question, like, though. So when you said you couldn't jump straight into eating the amount of fats, what was happening in your body when you did try?
Well, when your body's not used to eating fats, it can be like eating a laxative. And if you're trying to be a truck driver, that's kind of a bad day trucking. So yeah, that's one of the big signs that your body is not used to digesting those fats, because you don't digest it and it becomes like an oil slick, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it's definitely a lubricant. We'll say that. But there is also, like, I would get stomach pains from trying to digest the fats. I could tell because of my skin that I wasn't properly digesting the fats, because I had dry, ashy skin on certain areas, which means that you have a deficiency in processing lipids into your body. So really? Like my elbows and things like that, that was showing that I wasn't properly digesting the fats. So I started incorporating a regimen where I ate things to, one, increase stomach acid, which was like apple cider vinegar or coconut vinegar, doing the natural kinds with the mother in it that's unfiltered and raw. And those have their own nutrients, like the coconut vinegar has different nutrients than the apple cider. So I would rotate between those. And if I could get other vinegars that were raw and unfiltered, I'd get those. I incorporated something that is higher carb, but it actually helps you digest fats, which is beets. And I incorporated those into my diet for a while, because what beets do is they actually loosen up bile flow. And you'll see that people, one of the reasons why people have to get their gallbladder removed is because they don't eat a lot of fat, and their gallbladder, the bile inside of it gets hard and crystallizes, and they get these gallstones. And they have to get their gallbladder removed because of that's because of not eating fat, and their body doesn't get there. So to get that, to my sister. That bile, yeah,
that exactly
happened to my friends too.
Yeah.
So to get that bile flowing again, I incorporated some beets into my diet, and whenever I could, I would get fermented beets because that would lower the carbs. So there was this drink from Oregon Brine Works called Beet Kvass, which is like a Eastern European Russian kind of kombucha-like drink. It's a fermented beet drink. And I would get, they had some really delicious flavors at Oregon Brine Works, so I'd incorporate those into my diet. And say they have some like turmeric and like all kinds of other stuff that are beneficial as well. And when I saw that I was able to start processing those fats again, then I started leaning more toward a fat heavy diet. And I did the bulletproof style coffees, which is I called them the Fatty Joes, because I didn't want to pay any money to Dave Asprey.
Ditto, me too.
Yeah. So, but I would do those types of things, and I would incorporate MCT oils, because of the way they turn into ketones very quickly, especially the C8 MCT oils. And my goal was to bathe my brain in these ketones to help it function more properly. The side effect was that I actually started losing weight. One of the first things that happened is I woke up in bed, and I was experiencing, before the ketogenic diet, I was experiencing all these joint pains, back pain. And I'd wake up and I'd literally I felt like I was 1,000 years old trying to climb out of a sarcophagus. And, that's how bad my joints were. And incorporating certain things such as collagen proteins and things like that, but also the fat loss, which I did not realize was happening right away. And the anti-inflammatory effects of the diet itself was reducing the pain that I was feeling, as well as reducing the inflammation and the other things that were creating those CTE symptoms in my brain. So the side effect was pain reduced, and I lost weight. And then I continued basically with just trying to fix my brain. And within probably about a year and a half, I was down over 100 pounds.
That was like the next time I 100 pounds in 18 months.
It was over probably about 100. It was about 150 pounds, I think, because I was down to like 400 and something. I think I was down to about 460 or something like that. And then that was like, it was that long before I had stepped on a scale. And the only reason I had stepped on a scale is because I couldn't keep my pants up. And I was like, something's going on here. You know, like I went inside the truck stop and they have these little scales. You can put a quarter in, and I stepped up on there and I saw like 460 something. I was like, dang. So I just kept doing what I was doing.
And, it can be challenging. And, you know, I mentioned before, when you have a lot of weight to lose, it can be very intimidating. I you're really describing a lot of like process kind of things and not focusing on the weight. And that's something I encourage as well when I work with clients that are trying to lose weight, like focus on the process things. Like if you do this and weigh yourself like maybe once a month, once a week, but definitely not every day. And so, that's amazing. That's a lot of weight. The other thing you mentioned too, not only were you getting benefits from the anti-inflammatory foods in terms of like joints, but carrying around less weight is a big deal too on your joints, especially if you've lost 150 pounds. That's great.
Yeah. Especially if you're more mobile than what I was. I was actually sitting in the chair driving 11 hours a day. So I wasn't getting out and exercising that much. It hurt too much to go out and exercise when I started my weight loss journey. So like exercise did not play really a role in my initial weight loss journey. I would get out like walking to the bathroom before I started, you know, doing the ketogenic diet, just walking from the truck to the bathroom, my knees would be swollen, my ankle would be swollen, my joints, just climbing in and out of the truck, my shoulder I injured my neck and my shoulder in the car accident. And climbing in and out of the truck hurt, and moving around hurt. And I would not only walking around, I wouldn't just feel pain down in my lower body, my legs and everything, but I'd feel it in my shoulder as everything got jostled as I moved. Mm-hmm. And that was the thing. So when that inflammation started going away, I found that I was able to get out and move around more, go play with the dog a bit, you know, and getting into exercise was kind of a gradual thing. And then I ended up getting like a jump rope, some dumbbells. I already had some dumbbells. I actually started using the dumbbells. And I started doing more, you know, like squats and lunges and push-ups and that type of thing, because previously I couldn't do that.
Yeah. You know, the other thing you brought up, I've heard as well, especially with extreme levels of obesity, is very difficult to be comfortable. So sitting is uncomfortable. I have a client I've worked with for a number of years, not directly on weight loss, but on other things. But he describes quite often, you know, it's hard to find a chair that's comfortable to sit in, so I can't sit. When I stand, you have all the weight kind of just pushing down, and that's uncomfortable. Laying down is uncomfortable. And so, one of the things that he's done when he can, when it's warm, is getting in a pool, because that buoyancy gives that temporary relief from gravity. It's a real hassle being big. Not only that, but just, in terms of how things are made and constructed, it's not very friendly for people that are large and overweight. So like cars, clothes, all that stuff becomes really challenging if you're morbidly obese.
I remember when I was larger, I was looking at a Jeep to buy, and I could not fit in the driver's seat of the Jeep with the stick and everything like that. And the sales guy was actually trying to shove my leg underneath the,
oh, no way.
And I'm like, dude, are you coming with the car? Like, like if I can't get into it, like, but, I knew like sleep was a huge one. And sleep is also plays a huge role in your health. It plays a huge role in your stress levels, your inflammation, your ability to lose weight. But as a bigger person, I couldn't sleep well. Mm-hmm. I would lay on one side and I was tossing and turning most of the night because this side go to sleep and start to hurt. You know, this side go to sleep. So you're rolling around all night. You may not, if you get into certain positions, there's a term called positional asphyxia. Mm-hmm. And being bigger, it's hard to lay on your back. So you lay on your side, because if you lay on your back, you can get positional asphyxia and literally suffocate yourself by being in the wrong position. And I would feel it. I would lay on my back and I couldn't breathe that well. So I'd have to shift over to my shoulder and my side. Now I'm sleeping on my shoulder, which is injured mm-hmm. and creating more pain. And so it's, you know, definitely losing weight helped with another health aspect that helped me lose more weight, which is being able to sleep.
Yeah, sleep is big. We're up against a commercial break. And you know, your show is dedicated to a holistic approach. And we're hitting on a lot of these items that people tend to don't really consider, especially when they're trying to lose weight. So when we come back, we're going to jump more into some of the holistic ideas and holistic concepts that they're really important in terms of being overall healthy and maintaining a good weight for you. So be right back after this break. This is Toby Jenkins, founder of Jenkins Couples and Family Therapy and host of Paradigm, Insights into Relationships and You. Jenkins Couples and Family Therapy is a proud sponsor and supporter of Paradigm, Insights into Relationships and You. At Jenkins Couples and Family Therapy, we work with couples, families, and individuals walking with you through life's challenges and transitions. You can find out more about Jenkins Couples and Family Therapy and request an appointment through telehealth or in person at www.jenkinscft.com. Or by calling 859-806-0093. We're back. You're listening to Paradigm, Insights into Relationships and You. Today, my guest is Yogi Parker. He's the host of the Fatty Joe Show. And, you know, the show is dedicated to holistic health, and you are a poster child for approaching your life from a holistic health standpoint. You know, you started off losing weight, not by trying to lose weight, but trying to fix your brain, CTE.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm sure we're going to wrap around to some of the things that you observed or experienced as you, attack getting your brain healthier. But before the break, we were talking about sleep. And I think there's a lot more awareness of sleep. But there hadn't been in the past, because, you know, historically, especially, I can think of all the times where you were rewarded for not getting enough sleep, because that was a symbol that you were working hard. I only got three hours of sleep last night, and here I am back at it again. But I think we're getting a little wiser in terms of the role that sleep plays. So for you in this journey of getting healthier, how did you go about addressing your sleep, and what have been some of the benefits from it?
When I started the journey, I was on a truck, and sleep already sucks on the truck, because one of the things they associate with some of the most severe health issues on the planet is shift work, where you're working, you know, overnights or something like that. Well, as a truck driver, I didn't have a set schedule. So I could be driving one day and asleep, you know, at night, or I could be driving, you know, during the night and asleep during the day. It would just depend on what was going on. So I never really had a set schedule. And I did notice that when I did not sleep, things did not work well in my body. Digestion didn't work well. My brain didn't work well. And it, like, sleep seemed to be like, I say stress is your master control, and sleep is like the second control to the master control. It's like they're both right there, because when you don't sleep, you create that stress.
Mm-hmm. Very true.
And when you create that stress on your body, and that stress can, we talked about earlier about different things that can raise your blood glucose levels. Well, stress can do that because it releases a hormone called cortisol.
Oh, for sure.
And when you don't sleep, like, like one night of missed sleep can jack up your insulin to the point where like you can be borderline diabetic in one day, mm-hmm. just from lack of sleep, even if you're eating a carnivore diet. Mm-hmm. So sleep became a big priority for me. Of I couldn't necessarily pick when I slept, but I tried to make sure I get enough sleep when I could get it.
Yes.
And one of the things I noticed when I got off the truck, because I had stalled out around 360 for quite a while, when I got off the truck, I was able to get on a sleep schedule at Carrie's, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden another like 70, 80 pounds peeled right off.
Wow. Just from consistent sleep. 80 pounds.
Well,
it's great.
Yep. And also like I had better control of my diet because my insulin levels were more controlled because I wasn't producing as much cortisol. Mm-hmm. So when the insulin was more controlled, the ghrelin was more controlled. The leptin was firing properly. One of the things I noticed when I was doing my initial research is how many people from Silicon Valley were into this health space and talking about the ketogenic diet. And I was wondering why.
Yeah.
And one of the things is these people were all engineers. Yep. And engineers don't look at one system. They look at the entirety of how all the systems work together.
Right.
Whereas if you look at doctors, most doctors are specialists and they look at one system and that's it. That's all they look at. That's their wheelhouse. And they mm-hmm. may have some tertiary knowledge, but even most doctors don't deal with nutrition at all. No. And if they do, they repeat the same dietary standards that were created by Coca-Cola and Kellogg,
yep.
to sell cereal and soda. And then wonder why it's not working. And you'll see the doctors too that have converted to keto. They were doing the standard American diet. They were following the rules and they were telling their patients to follow the rules. And then they realized when it stopped working for them.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And they were like, oh, wait a minute. There's something to this. Yep. So in my mind, if you want to approach your health, you got to think like an engineer. Mm-hmm. You got to look at all your systems and see how they all work together. There's still a lot of stuff I'm struggling with.
Yeah.
You know,
that stress is a big deal. And you know, that's, you know, I was laughing when you were talking about your doctor, because I've been extremely frustrated with conversations with my endocrinologist. And I don't want to sound like a anti-vaxxer or a conspiracy theorist, but the more you learn from a systemic standpoint, there's a lot of literature out there. And that's kind of the good thing about the age we're living in. It's real easy to get information. Now you have to verify this accurate, but you know, my experience,
blessing and a curse right there.
It is. You got to make sure it's accurate. But my experience with my doctor was kind of the same. He kind of belittled me for thinking out of the box when it comes to nutrition and also being more in charge of my nutrition and medicine. But I had a conversation with him about stress, because as a therapist, that's one of the things that I am trying to help clients monitor stress. And so, you know, you mentioned cortisol and the stress response. You know, it's one of the things we kind of dove into the menstrual cycle for women. Stress is one of those things not only disrupts sleep, disrupts glucose, disrupts the menstruation cycle too as well. So I had this conversation with my doctor because I knew the answer. I said, well, what kind of role does stress play in managing diabetes? And he says, oh, it's huge. And I'm thinking, why haven't you initiated this conversation? Why do I have to bring that to you? Right. And so it's so true. And, you know, especially given the times we're living in, we're all experiencing quite a bit of stress from how unpredictable things are and just the number of things going on. But cortisol is huge. Absolutely huge. The stress hormone is huge.
Well, let's look at vitamin C. Okay. So vitamin C has been touted to boost your immune system, but there's very little evidence that it actually does that. One of the things that vitamin C actually does, though, is it's a master detox agent. it helps get a lot of toxins that we're exposed to either through our food or through the environment that we're around out of the body. So when these toxins are inside your body, what happens is your body's under stress. So your body fires up the leukocytes and it fires up the immune system and it starts overworking the immune system to the point where the immune system starts to get tired. Whereas when you detox the system and you introduce things like vitamin C to help remove these things, then your immune system can balance out, can recuperate, can figure out what it needs to do to build new attack drones in the form of antibodies and things like that. And it gets to settle down and you have less response from autoimmune issues and things like that. And you have a stronger working immune system. And it's like working out. If you're constantly working out 8, 9, 12 hours a day, you're going to break down. If you don't have that rest, if you don't have that, you know, that constant sleep. So these things, you know, they're all seem to be related to stress in some sort of way. And like a little bit of stress is good for us. We need to have a bit of stress. So it's like, don't get rid of all your stress, but make sure your stressors are healthy and make sure that they're done in a way where you also have recovery.
Oh, for sure. You know, going back to what you were talking about with sleep, you talked about quantity. So for you, there's quantity and quality, and then kind of sleep hygiene. What have been your go-tos between quantity, quality, and hygiene, sleep hygiene?
Well, the sleep hygiene sucked on the truck. So nowadays I had to do more things in order to get good sleep on the truck because of not being able to sleep at proper times and things like that. So I would often make the inside of the cab cold, because you sleep better in the cool weather. If I could get a hot shower before I went to bed, that was also ideal, because when you get a hot shower, you can trick your body into making feel it like it's cold. Once you get back into a colder environment, you can sleep better. A comfortable mattress was huge for me. The truck mattresses suck, especially for a bigger guy. And they're very thin and you compress them, you know. So I went and bought a proper, like real thick memory foam mattress that played a huge role. And then like having a nice, warm, relaxing beverage, either like a sleepy time tea or something like that. And then trying to shut off as much electronics around me as possible these were all key factors. Instead of watching TV at night, a lot of times I would sit and read or listen to an audiobook. So these were some of the sleep hygiene things that I would do. Now it's much easier. I don't have to do as many things because I have a schedule. And I found that now, you know, especially now older I get, the more I stick to that schedule, I'm better.
Yeah.
So, but even now we have those wind down times that we just sit and relax a bit before we go to bed.
Yeah. Those are all really, really good. You know, from a therapy standpoint, I also help clients sleep or develop good sleep habits, because I mean, lack of sleep goes back to the concepts we were talking about being hangry. When we're sleepy and tired, we are not generally our best selves. Well, we're up against another commercial break. My guest today is Yogi Parker. He's the host of the Fatty Joe podcast, and we're talking holistic health, weight loss, and keto today. So we'll be right back after this break. This is Toby Jenkins, host of Paradigm, Insights into Relationships and You, and this is 1 Minute Insight. Today, I'm going to talk a little more about the role of closure as it pertains to loss. Now, if you look at civilizations all the way back through time, when people died, even when we were in hunter-gatherer communities, there was always some type of ritual or something that these communities did to signify that person is no longer here. And that is significant in how we grieve and how we move on from loss. So the role of these rituals really is to signify a closing of a chapter, acceptance that something
something is different. And, you know, your faith tradition plays into that. So it could be from your belief system that this person is passed on to an afterlife or rebirth, or that they've moved into a spiritual realm and they're still with you. Where we get into trouble with trying to process these losses is when we don't have that kind of closure. So we'll talk about that some more next time.
This is Toby Jenkins, host of Paradigm, Insights into Relationships and You. One of the biggest stressors that we encounter is money. Money issues strain our family life, create stress in our relationships, and can provoke serious anxiety and depression. And many don't know where to turn to get relief. That's where the Darius Norman Show comes in. The Darius Norman Show airs daily on WTTA FM 101.2 from 1 to 2 p.m. Darius Norman is a certified credit and financial counselor and author of Rewriting Financial Rules. It's his objective to empower others with educational tools and services to assist them in taking control of their financial and credit issues. Tune in to the Darius Norman Show on WTTA FM 101.2, and you can follow him on Twitter at the Darius Norman Show. We're back. You're listening to Paradigm, Insights into Relationships and You. My guest today is Yogi Parker. He is the host of the Fatty Joe podcast. So, you know, we've been talking about many aspects of holistic health, including nutrition, because we're both follow a ketogenic diet. And so, you know, we're talking about sleep. And, you know, while you're talking about sleep, one of the things, you know, we you know, sleep is important. Nutrition is important. And one of the things I experienced, you know, related to sleep was kind of a reset in when, I would get sleepy and when I was awake. And essentially the best way I can describe it is that pretty much 9:30, I am done. But I wake up pretty much without an alarm clock around 5:30-ish, and I'm awake and it's like the lights are on. And like they're on all day. And so it's been an interesting experience, and I've talked to other people who've experienced the same thing. But you know, I no longer experience the energy ups and downs throughout the day, because you know, burning fat is way more efficient. You don't have these crash and burn, or you know, crash and burn cycles. But and so I've experienced just the energy and alertness and clarity. And I think I'm more balanced throughout the day, not only just, you know, mentally, but in the relationships I'm in. But, you know, you were on this journey to fix your brain. And so how did you know as you were going through this that it was working for you?
Well, one of the symptoms that I had that was actually, it was a physical sensation that I had before I started keto is I literally felt like my brain was underwater. I had done a lot of diving, surfing, and that sensation when you're down 10, 15 feet of the pressure of the water against your head, I actually felt like that, like while I was sitting and driving in the truck. Mm. And I'd feel it behind my eyes. I'd feel it around my forgetfulness. My inability to articulate what I wanted to say, the string of sentence together properly. I would have a thought or idea, or somebody would tell me something and I would forget it 5 minutes later. Mm-hmm. And I do notice that I still can be very forgetful on things on occasion, but it's not nearly as bad. But these are the things that I was experiencing. And I used to be, when I was younger, I used to be very good at being able to absorb information from a book and being able to read and things like that. And I felt during the time where I was experiencing all this, it was difficult to read. It was difficult to absorb that information. Brain would go off sideways. And you talked about energy. I definitely felt a lack of energy, not just physically, but mentally and in a way, like emotionally as well. I felt like my brain was tired. And when I was driving, there was a lot of times where I had to pull over and take naps, and I would take naps mm-hmm. instead of eating sometimes my meal, because I would drive for like 3-4 hours a day and I'd be exhausted and I needed to go sleep. I felt like I'm crashing. And I mean, this is after like 3 cups of coffee. And I'm ready to go crash. And so these are things that all started to go away. Like one of the first things that I felt like is that pressure on my head seemed to be relieved. And when that started going away, I realized something was up. And then I realized I was retaining the information from the audiobooks and the podcasts that I was listening to much better, because that's how I occupied my time in the truck when I drove, is I listened to audiobooks and podcasts. That's how I learned about a lot of the things that I learned about.
And it's evident by the many things you have just spouted off about how the body works and hormones and everything else that you are definitely retaining.
Yeah, you know, this is from a guy that barely graduated high school. You got to understand, like, I'm not, you know, like I you could have pronounced a lot of my high school report cards as f-d-duh. So, you know, these were things that I definitely noticed, because it was something, I think I started experiencing some of the brain function type stuff while I was still in high school, but it was just mild enough that it didn't, it didn't hit as hard as where I would notice it as I was when I was injured in the truck sitting on my butt. And I think with eating the low fat diet, because I transitioned from a low fat vegan diet into a ketogenic diet.
Yeah.
And I think with that vegan diet that I was trying to eat on the truck, or vegetarian diet most of the time, because sometimes I'd incorporate eggs or cheese, I was not giving my brain the fuel it needed with the ketones, with the fat, and I was not giving the brain the building blocks with the omega-3s, with the saturated fat and things that it needed to regenerate itself, you know. So when I started doing that, and I gave it a better fuel to run off of, which is the ketones, which is, if you look at ketones versus carbohydrates in the body, when you burn carbohydrates, it releases a sticky substance as a byproduct, which ketones burns much cleaner. So it's like the difference between diesel and gasoline is the way it's often called. And one of the reasons why people have issues with cholesterol is not necessarily from the cholesterol itself, but there's a few factors that come into play. One, inflammation in the body causing restriction and stuff into the cells. Two, the sugar that they're eating, which also causes the inflammation, but the byproduct from that sugar creates a process on the cholesterol molecule called glycination, where it will bond to the triglyceride and the cholesterol molecules, because the triglyceride is like a boat that carries the cholesterol through the system, because cholesterol is fat and it needs this protein molecule to carry it. Well, these sugar byproducts will bond to those cells and turn them, the LDL particles from these big light fluffy particles, which are really good for our immune systems and everything like that, to these hard, dense little pebble, sticky pebbles. Now, when these pebbles go through and they find an area of your body with inflammation inside the blood vessels, because of chronic stress for whatever reason, they stick to it. And that's where you get your plaques. So that is where that comes from. And I noticed my energy levels kicked back up. I noticed that I was, you know, I didn't go to the doctor all that much. We talked off air, like going to the doctor is a big thing. Like something had to be really messed up for you to go to the doctor. So, but I felt most of the time less headaches and things like that as well. And I have a feeling that helped. That was also because blood was flowing through my body much easier, because I wasn't having the restrictions that I previously was.
It's awesome. So speaking of going to the doctor, do you have, you know, before biomarkers, after, was that just, you just feel better?
I just feel better. So like, I kind of, like I said, I don't go to the doctors. I have a bad case of white coat syndrome.
Yeah, me too.
Where you see the white coat and you're like, oh crap, you know, like, and my mom, especially country lady, and my dad's from California, but my mom, country lady, like, we didn't go to the doctor. Like, it's, you know, you duct tape, you're all right. Throw some dirt on it, you're good. go play, you know, stop crying, rub some dirt on it. You're good. You know, and I kind of grew up with that mentality. And I mean, even hiking and backpacking, stuff happens when you're out in the woods and you can't get to a doctor. So like, you know, super glue became a friend, you know, duct tape, things like that, because it would stay on. So I, you know, did a lot of self-administered first aid and things like that. So when it came to like researching biomarkers, one, as a driver, I couldn't get off the truck that much to go. We did have our biannual DOT physicals though. And 2 years, I had one DOT physical before I started keto and my cholesterol was starting to go up and everything was, you know, like they're saying your blood pressure is starting to be a little high. I never had high blood pressure in my life. And they're like, your blood pressure is starting to be a little high. The following year after I went on to keto, everything back down.
Oh, excellent.
So
yeah, I would say, you know, that might be an interesting thing to talk about as well. My doctor, when I started keto, was initially alarmed at my cholesterol levels, but similar to you, I'd done my own research about it and I was comfortable with it. They were also concerned about my level of ketones, and there was another biomarker that they flagged that's related to ketones. You might know what it is. I can't remember what it was. But they were also alarmed at how high that was. And then because I was diabetic, they immediately jumped to the far end of ketoacidosis, which is this combination of high blood acid and high blood sugar, which is extremely dangerous. Right. But I was nowhere near that. And so, so what are some of those other things that doctors may not be aware of with a keto diet?
I've had a few doctors on the show, and a lot of doctors have said straight up they were never really taught the difference between ketosis and ketoacidosis. And so like they're really unaware of this process. I had Gary Taubes on the show, and Gary Taubes talked about the bad science that went behind Ansel Keys, who created the heart health hypothesis. And what Ansel did was, one, he was funded by the sugar and grain companies, and that was where his money came from. And he had to come up with research that the sugar and grain companies could market. So that was his goal. Well, he started out with a 22-country study, and it went down to a 7-country study because those are the only 7 countries he could figure out to make his theory work. And the only reason those 7 countries worked is because it was post-World War II, and all these people's diets had changed during World War II because of lack of supplies. And what he did, he knew it had changed, but he conflated that what they were currently eating was what they had always ate.
Yeah.
And he didn't take things into consideration. So, you know, I think the biggest thing with the doctors is the fact that they're running off of knowledge that isn't about the nutrition space. They're running off of localized, specialized knowledge for one system, you know, and they say when you got a hammer, everything's a nail. And so they're not looking at whole systems, and they're looking, a lot of our nutritional quote unquote science has actually come from agriculture industries and large food companies trying to sell products. And there is actually a marketing executive that just recently came out with a book. He left his marketing firm because they were writing papers that looked like scientific papers and sending them to doctors, who then this became the knowledge that they were running with in order to recommend products or medicines or anything like that. Sometimes even unproven technologies that are coming in. And he had a crisis of conscience when he saw his fake article show up in a medical journal.
Ooh, wow.
And he had enough knowledge to know that what he was promoting was actually harmful to people. And he decided to quit. That's it. And he wrote a book about it. And if I could remember the name of the book or the guy, I'd let you know. But I read that one pre-keto. Right. I just remember that aspect of it. Yeah, I'll have to
research. That's a can
it.
Of worms right there. We're up against a commercial break. And we'll have to get to that can of worms after the break. Listening to Paradigm, Insights into Relationships and You. We're talking holistic health and keto with Yogi Parker, host of the Fatty Joe podcast show. Be right back.
You've got mail.
Okay, today's listener mail comes from Sarah. Sarah writes, I'm a 42-year-old divorced mother of two. I got divorced 8 years ago. I've been dating my current boyfriend for 4 years. My boyfriend, who is 48, continues to send me mixed messages. One day he was married, the next day he doesn't. Boyfriend is the only child of a protected single mother who thinks her only son can do nothing. My boyfriend was told the only plans to enter the woman he's going to marry to his mother. And I have not met her or too many other people in the family. Tell me I should get out of this relationship with the mama's. Are they right? What would you tell Sarah?
I would definitely be cautious of that one because, there's obviously a dynamic that's going on there that either, if you want to go the suspicious route, either there's something to hide or there's a dynamic there of got a constant mom, and that might be a challenging thing when it comes to his rightly service to you in marriage. That could be a conflict of interest.
That is really good and insightful. So yeah, I agree. I think from a relationship standpoint, from a therapy standpoint, might go to this parent child relationship and child. Not anything sexual. This child has been kind of to a husband, so to speak, filled in a role that has never been there. And that same mother may be more the mother, not any type of intimate kind of way. They feel like he should be the object of son's attention to you. There could potentially be always conflict, like you're saying. Who's number one in my life? Who's in this relationship? I would say, pursuing this relationship further would be like marrying both of them. If marriage is what you want. We are back. You're listening to Paradigm, Insights into Relationships and You. Today, I'm honored to have Yogi Parker, the host of the Fatty Joe podcast show. And, we've been talking through this episode about holistic health, which this is what his show is about. And a lot of it, he is bringing his own personal experience with weight loss. And actually weight loss by way of trying to fix his brain function from repeated traumas to the brain, CTE, which, the NFL has done a good job of bringing that to the public, not necessarily willingly at first. So, one of the things that gets in the way of holistic health is support. One, both, within your network of support. So you often see, especially like in a family situation where not everyone is, like in my house, for instance, we pretty much all eat this way, but it can be difficult when not everybody's on the same page here. But so let's start with maybe like information. What are some good go-to sources that you rely on for information, strategies, that kind of stuff?
I did a lot of audiobooks when I was driving and podcasts as well. One of the places that I would listen to is the Let's Truck radio show. That's where I started out listening with Kevin Rutherford. And they created an online group. They're kind of moving on to a new platform now, but they used to be on Facebook with Destination Health. They're still there. The creators of it are not as active anymore. And you can tell. But there's some other great places you can go. One, Carrie and I have a Facebook group that you can be a part of, and you can get support, recipes, answer your questions. And it's called the Keto Kitchen with Carrie Brown and Yogi Parker. And it's a free group to join. You can be in there. There are a ton of Facebook groups out there that can fit within what you're doing. My only advice on people with those Facebook groups is to try to see what they're preaching about before you get too involved and caught up with them, and try to avoid ones that are hyper dogmatic about issues where they're constantly fighting, because the human body is too complex for one solution to fit. And there may be something working for people that run the group, and they may try to project it on you as this is the only way it's going to work. So look for groups that have a desire to explore and an open-mindedness, and think like the engineers, like I said earlier, and whole systems and things like that, and realize that there is a thing called bio-individuality, and things may not work for you that work for other people.
Right.
So for men, one of the groups that I'm a part of is the Keto Man's Club, and they have the Keto Man's Club or Keto 101 Man's Club too for beginners. So that's a great place to be. I'm a part of the Chewing the Fat group, and you know, the online groups, they could be can of worms, but when you find a good group, it can be a great area for support and great area to hang out in and talk to people. There's another group called the Check-In Center that Brian Lavallee, and it's just basically if you're having stressful times or things like that, you need to talk to somebody, and it's not even about diet. It's just that's what it's there for. So that's another great way to go if you just, you know, you need to get something off your chest, you need somebody to listen to. That's what people do in that group. Another resource could be, you know, once, like we said on when you were on my podcast, is seeking therapy. And you know, there's a lot of avenues for that now, but there's some nonprofit works groups that, but you got to be careful that to make sure that the people are trained. There's an app called Headspace, which is really good, and you can get involved with the Headspace, and they have very low cost options where you actually get to talk to a real person. And you know, the podcast that I listen to, Two Keto Dudes, is one that I listened to for a long time. The Keto Man's Club podcast, Fat Fueled Family, Keto Savage. There's a bunch out there, and you just find the ones that fit right with you. And as far as books goes, I started a lot of my keto journey was started with the Jimmy Moore books, you know, Keto Clarity and all that. But also any book by Gary Taubes, Finian Volek, a great starting book. It's not necessarily keto, but it's a couple great starting books for people to understand how fat works is The Secret Life of Fat by Sylvia Tara. And also Eat the Yolks by Liz Wolf. Fantastic books to start with as far as formulating a whole foods real diet goes. And one of the resources I use, if you have limited access to quality foods and things, one of the resources I use quite a bit is Keto Chow.
Yeah, you know, that's a ton of resources. And, you know, you highlight a couple of things. One is that there's a ton of good information out there. And making sure, and not one shoe fit all kind of a thing. So, you know, the only other things I would add too is that, you know, through this journey, I've always enjoyed cooking, and cooking is an important part of this. And so kind of like you, my family, my wife and I in particular, started out with the Whole 30, which is, from a practical standpoint, or thinking about it in comparison with a keto diet, it includes some carbs. And I'd say the difference between Whole30 and keto is essentially on a keto diet, you eat things that grow above the ground. Whole30 includes some like root vegetables, potatoes, sweet potatoes, that kind of thing. So the Whole30, in they have a very awesome cookbook methodology behind why it works, how it works. Real Meal Revolution would be one I would add in. Also has some of these studies that you talked about in terms like the Ansel Key studies in that book. Also a ton of recipes and go-to like staples. And then what were you gonna say?
I was gonna say another good one, Nourishing Traditions. There's a whole series of them. I can't remember the author's name, but those are really good. And they have more of an ancestral approach, but also a lot of science with it. And they also have some recipes. And then Carrie's written a ton of great cookbooks too. Oh, so those are out there. So yeah,
from a dessert any of the cookbooks, Carrie's ice cream.
Well, book. Not even. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Her ice cream book is the keto ice cream scoop is like, I've gotten to try a lot of stuff off of that now and it's awesome. And I get to try the new stuff too. So yeah. I'm feeling lucky. I used her keto crock pot and her keto soups cookbooks when I was on the truck, because these are easy to do. And all of her soups, you know, majority of them take like 15 minutes to prepare.
Yeah.
And the crock pot stuff, you just throw it in the crock pot, you leave it alone, go, and then you come back when it's done.
Yeah. And going back to, you know, information is readily available. Like the two books I referenced, actually I'll mention a third. I can't remember the name of it. It's not Keto Nom Nom. Maybe it might be Paleo Nom Nom. But a lot of these books have accompanying websites. So if you don't have the book, you can get access through their websites for their recipes and that kind of stuff. And those are kind of the key resources. The other part to it, is knowing how to shop, but that is really simplified. And actually when I go to the grocery store and I get checked out, usually the person says, "You're a keto eater, aren't you?" Because you can tell by what I buy. There are a ton of resources to help you do this, and it's not as impossible as it may sound or daunting as it sounds. So before we leave here, I want to let people know, where can they find you, where can they find your show, how can they listen in?
Well, the Master Control is carriebrown.com. There's links to just about everything on there, and you could also see the cookbooks that are being put out. We have the Facebook page, which I talked about before, and if you want to go, or the Facebook group, you can go there. It's the Keto Kitchen with Carrie Brown and Yogi Parker, and we also have a page too, Carrie Brown and Yogi Parker page, that you can tag us and ask us questions and link through there. We have a YouTube channel, and it's the Carrie Brown and Yogi Parker YouTube channel. And on that, we have the Fatty Joe Show as a video version airs on that. Nice. But we also have a ton of cooking videos. And we do know that a lot of people now have not grown up cooking and they don't have a lot of basic skills. So we even have basic cooking skills, demos, things like that, just to help you get going. We've encountered people that don't know how to chop onions. So we did a video on chopping onions.
Yeah.
So, Instagram, I'm at The Real Yogi Parker, and, we do have Patreon groups. If you ever want to come in and support the Fatty Joe Show, the Fatty Joe Show is available basically on every podcast platform out there. You can just do a search, The Fatty Joe Show. But we also have a Patreon, the patreon.com, The Fatty Joe Show, or patreon.com, Carrie Brown. And these are, if you want to get in and you want to support the things that we're doing, the interviews that we're doing, or because everything that we do is listener supported or supported amongst the people in the group. So it helps us keep developing recipes, keep putting things out there, and keep the lights on, the gas coming, and everything like that. So we love it when people can be. And if you do come into one of those groups, there's all kinds of special bonuses and stuff for certain levels. we do have a couple of private Facebook groups you could be a part of too if you're a Patreon supporter.
Nice. Man, this has been amazing. Thank you so much for sharing your personal journey. And I often always end up saying, you know, if we've helped one person out there get closer to the life they want to live through the holistic nutrition, then this time has been well worth it.
Definitely.
You've been listening to Paradigm, Insights into Relationships and You. My guest today, Yogi Parker, host of the Fatty Joe podcast. We'll be back next week. If you have a relationship therapy or personal growth question you would like answered on the air, email me at toby@paradigmradioshow.com. You can find archive shows and additional details about guests of the show at the show's website, www.paradigmradioshow.com. You can follow weekly one-minute insight posts on the show's Instagram and Twitter feed at Paradigm Radio Show. For archived episodes, you can find episodes wherever you subscribe to podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify. Paradigm, Insights into Relationships and You, is brought to you by Jenkins Professional Services and Hype Media Global.
Thank you for tuning into Paradigm, Insights into Relationships and You with Toby Jenkins. Join us again.